If you shop at Amazon, I have a request. When you shop at Amazon, don't go to Amazon.com. That sounds weird. How are you going to shop at Amazon if you don't go there? Well, don't go directly there. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you go there, there's a giant Amazon logo. Click on it. It takes you right to the Amazon homepage where you were heading anyways, but that small detour tells Amazon, we sent you there. And when they get that message, they send us a commission on everything that you buy. So it's a great way to support us without having to do anything different other than when you shop at Amazon, start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you for downloading the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Don't forget, you can get these shows with the ads and plugs and commercials all edited out on our special VIP audio feed with a VIP membership. That applies to all four shows that I host during the week, the Wade Keller Post Shows and podcasts later in the week, and also all seven PW Torch livecasts, plus all of our VIP exclusive shows throughout the month. There's about 100 of them. I host about 12 per week that are VIP exclusive. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, post pay-per-view roundtables, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, and the Fix with Todd Martin. We got a bunch of other great content. Check out full details at pwtorchvipinfo.com. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com. Yes, all the VIP podcasts, including the ad-free versions of this show, are compatible with popular podcast apps on both iPhone and Android. You can also stream the shows right from our ad-free VIP website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. So check out details if you want to support us and get these shows ad-free and a ton of other VIP-exclusive podcasts. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com for more details. We've got a mobile-friendly sign-up form. You can be VIP in about 2 minutes. Go for it. pwtorchvipinfo.com.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Matt, as a follow-up to last week's emotional episode of Raw, WWE mixed in the real-life emotion of Roman Reigns taking a leave of absence, relinquishing the Universal title, with the angle, the storyline of Dean Ambrose turning on Seth Rollins, officially ending the Shield. I was against it last week. I thought it was exploitative. I wasn't alone, but I think I was in the minority. And others thought, no, that's a great way to just, you know, shift things back onto WWE storylines and give people something to talk about and not just feel bad about the Roman situation. Where were you last week on this, Matt, and where are you now after Raw in terms of seeing how they followed up on it?
Well, Wade, again, thanks for having me on. As far as last week, I don't think you can blame them too much. You know, they're booked on the fly with that situation coming up. As for this week, they had time to kind of figure out how they would do it, how they would mesh the two together. And it appeared to me they doubled down on integrating that real-life storyline with the Ambrose turn. I put a poll out earlier on Twitter. I think the minority believe that's in bad taste, but sadly, I'm among that minority. There was three or four comments that just hit me in a wrong spot, considering what the very real person who plays Roman Reigns is going through with leukemia. I think there was probably a better way to handle it, and I'm not a fan of it.
So, with that established, from a storyline standpoint, I thought Seth Rollins did a really nice job with the promo. And one aspect that I liked about it, besides just coming across as a leader and an alpha male, John Cena was always kind of the guy where he took the mic and you're like, all right, he's the conscience of Raw. He's the spokesperson for the brand. And not everybody can do that. And I think a lot of people didn't feel Roman Reigns quite got to that level. I thought Seth did here. And I also think that Seth accounted for the fact that he does not have a spotless record in this regard. And I liked that aspect of the promo, that Seth said, yeah, I did something terrible, and maybe that's why you're not over it from years ago, but at least I explained myself face-to-face like a man. And I thought that owned what he did, so fans weren't going, well, what, you know, the whole whataboutism thing. What about you, Seth? He said, hey, I did something, I regret it, but I explained to your face, and you're not. So it put Dean on a lower moral standing. I thought that was a nice touch.
It's the kind of you know, whataboutism that kind of works in wrestling sometimes. I think that Seth bringing it up, but being self-aware about it is what made him, you know, the good guy in this situation. And the fact that Ambrose, you know, walked away, didn't feel the need to explain himself, that worked as well. But really, as you said, the connection that Seth made, he's done a better job than Roman has at doing that. I think he may lack some of the X factor, some of the it factor, you know, to get where people think Roman is. But at the same time, I don't think you could say that Seth himself could have done any better. And actually, outside of the connection and the integration of the real life storyline, I thought the follow up to what happened last week was good, with the exception of it being so late in the show and not being referred to as much as maybe it could have earlier in the show.
I like Dean Ambrose, too. I thought that his body language, the brooding, the snarling, the petulance almost, or it came across as heelish. The goal here is for Seth to be cheered and Dean to be booed. And I thought the body language served that goal well. So again, I'm just giving a kind of a thumbs up to the optics and the wording. And I'm higher on Seth, I think, than you are in the regard of having kind of that polish of being able to be the top A guy, not just an A-minus guy.
Well, I'm not sure it's polish as much. I don't believe really in it. You know, I think, quote, it, unquote, can be taught and learned and developed. I mean, Steve Austin is a great example of that. I just wonder with Seth, I've always said, you know, who is Seth Rollins? Why does he do what he does? What motivates him? What is the connection he has with the audience? His popularity has definitely increased as of the last few months. I think it's correlative with, you know, him using that great finisher of his again. At the same time, I'm not down on him. I'm just not sure if he could be a standard bearer for WWE. I don't think it's not any knock on him to say that maybe he's not at that very premier level.
Yeah, I wonder how fans feel about that. You know, in terms of, like, there's the storyline with Daniel Bryan. He's not the face of the company. He can't be. And I think from a corporate standpoint, they might look at Seth and go, I don't know if he's quite, you know, Roman Reigns level, where you just go, you know, you melt when you see him, or you are impressed with him when you see him. I think fans, especially when he made his return a few years back at Extreme Rules in New Jersey, the fans were ready, I think, to embrace him. And I think he's earned even more from that. Looking back now, and I'm trying not to, like, say, well, bring the leukemia aspect into it. So if you can subtract that, do you think WWE, that Seth would have been greatly elevated by getting that SummerSlam match against Brock Lesnar instead of Roman and getting a win? Would that have been a big ingredient? And is that something, a card they can still play now, where maybe that does cement Seth more if Paul Heyman guaranteed it tonight? He said it's a spoiler that Lesnar's going to win the championship. Could they be setting up Seth, not for a redo, but for sort of a, I guess, a make good, for lack of a better term? We're going to let Seth get that big win over Lesnar, since we might need him long term to be a guy who gets the rub from once and for all ending Lesnar's streak.
Yeah, I think the opportunity was definitely there when he made his first comeback before they ruined it the next night. And also the opportunity was there to take advantage of that this past summer. Yes, the opportunity is still there, because what Seth Rollins does is he plays off people really well. If he's playing off somebody, I think he can be a guy who could be at the top for a little bit and still hold that credibility. But I don't know if he's a guy who can take a weaker opponent, a weaker character, and elevate them. I think Brock Lesnar does more for Seth Rollins than Seth Rollins does for Brock Lesnar in that equation. And I'm not sure how much Seth brings to the table as far as elevating other guys, if he is going to be that top guy.
All right, well, let's set the table, introduce ourselves, and invite your phone calls. Also, this is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, and it is Monday, October 29th, 2018, right after Monday Night Raw on USA Network, live from Charlotte, North Carolina. We have a planned on-site correspondent who we'll be talking to later on in the program. But in the meantime, the voice you hear, the inimitable voice you hear as co-host on today's program, is Matt Kuhn, podcast host extraordinaire. He is back with us. Matt, thanks for joining me on a big episode of Raw here.
Absolutely. It's always an honor. Longtime VIP member, longtime Torch reader, and it's always great to talk wrestling with you, Wade.
So, me too. Same to you. We have our phone lines open, and this is a cool format, And I encourage so many of you who have not yet to take advantage of that and give us a call. If you're streaming the show live, the number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. This is not an exclusive club. You are very welcome to call in with to either underline our opinions or push back against our opinions or introduce new topics. It is a friendly environment in that context. If we disagree, we will tell you. We're not going to just smile and change our mind without a compelling argument, but bring it. Bring it on. Tell us what you thought of tonight's Raw, and we'll get a conversation rolling. First-time callers, welcome. Women are welcome. We'd love to get more women callers. We get stats for the podcast. It says there's a lot of you out there listening. We'd love to hear from you more on the call-in line. Maybe you're just listening on a woman in your house's computer and the computer's confused. I don't know. We'd love to hear from you. So the number is 347-215-8558. And we also have an email mailbox that we welcome you to email your comments. If for some reason you can't talk or live on the program or are shy, then let us know your thoughts and your questions. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. That's Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com, and we'll be getting to the mailbag segment later in the program. If you call, important note, you got to push 1 on your keypad, and that indicates that you want to be on the show and aren't just waiting for a time later to join or just want to listen in and decide if you want to talk later on. So be sure to push 1 on your keypad after calling us at 347-215-8558. I have not had the chance to talk about Harry's Razors in a while, but they're back as a sponsor of the program, and I'm happy to endorse this product. It is my razor of choice now, and I highly recommend you check it out if you shave. Harry's Razors are great. The packaging that they come in, the craftsmanship of what you hold in your hand, the balance, the sense of quality is all important when you're putting something sharp up against your skin and you want it to feel good and leave your skin feeling good, but also accomplish its task of giving you a clean shave. Harry's does all of that. It's got a smooth, comfortable glide. It just feels right in your hand. Those cheap plastic razors or the imitations out there that try to look fancy and you overpay for don't have the same feel. Harry stands behind the quality of their blades, but they know switching razors isn't an easy decision, so they created a trial offer. And you can claim yours by going to harrys.com/pwtorch. That's right, harrys.com/pwtorch to redeem your offer. You can redeem your trial set at harrys.com/pwtorch. You get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. Weighted ergonomic handle, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, a travel blade cover, all in pretty cool packaging. And if you end up liking Harry's, well, you can save money in the long run because by selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's can offer their blades at a price much lower than the leading brand, just $2 per blade compared to $4 or more. So check it out. Go get your free $13 value trial set with everything you need at harrys.com/pwtorch.
Hey guys, I don't mean to tear you away from more amazing content that Wade Keller is putting out like he does every single week, but I need to tell you about my podcast. It's Sam Roberts, The Last Professional Broadcaster, and every Thursday morning I bring to you Not Sam Wrestling. The biggest names in the world of professional wrestling are on Not Sam Wrestling, whether it's WWE superstars like Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, Seth Rollins, Charlotte, Becky Lynch, NXT superstars like Shayna Baszler in the Undisputed Era, independent stars like Joey Janela, promoters like Court Bauer. The voices that you want to hear from this world of wrestling are on Not Sam Wrestling. Plus, every week, we break down everything that's going on in this world with the State of Wrestling segment, which Wade Keller has joined me on more than a few times. Hey, you can get the podcast every single Thursday morning. YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, notsam.com, and you can go the extra mile. There's bonus shows, there's videos, and it's all available at patreon.com/notsamwrestling. However you want to get it, get it. It's Not Sam Wrestling. And now, back to our buddy Wade.
Matt, another big angle at the end of the show is one of the main events for Crown Jewel on Friday, a global pay-per-view event. WWE affirming last week they are going to hold it in Saudi Arabia, but not proud of it. I mean, let's be frank. This is not something that they are hanging a lantern on. They didn't mention it. It isn't on any graphics. Before I get to, I was going to talk about the Undertaker Brothers of Destruction, or excuse me, the DX Brothers of Destruction angle at the end of the show. Not that there's a ton to say about it, but I've kind of led us this way. What's your take on not? We can talk about the decision to hold it there. And a lot of people have strong feelings on it. I know I do. And I don't think they should be there. And I think they should have just found a way to get out of the deal or at least put a pause on the relationship. I think everybody would have understood. And if the Saudis didn't, then, you know, come sue them in court in this country and see what happens. That said, if WWE is going to do it, are they trying to have it both ways by not mentioning it? Or is that just the obvious, prudent thing to do, which is hold it there under contract, take their money, but don't give them what they want, which initially was that sense of acceptance and celebration that WWE was coming to their country. How do you look at it? Because honestly, I can see legitimate argument from a variety of perspectives on how to interpret and react to their lack of mentioning it now 3 weeks in a row.
Well, it is having it both ways. It is an obvious kind of PR move to not mention the country, not mention the location. What does counter that in, you know, anybody thinking logically is how much they're promoting it. Like, I'm still not sure exactly what skin they have in the game of promoting it the way they are. I get Shawn Michaels is returning. I don't know what's in it for them to keep promoting the show because it's a bot show. The money's there. It's got all this negative press. Why not sweep it more under the rug than they have? I guess maybe you would know more than I would. What is, you know, the end game in them promoting this show the way they have as if it's some major show?
I think it's hard for them to fathom having Undertaker and Kane against Triple H and the return of Shawn Michaels to the wrestling ring and not promote it as a big deal. I think they can't fathom having Brock Lesnar wrestling, period, much less for the Universal title with their number one belt on the line and not promote it. So I think there's that aspect of it that it sort of defines down some big things if they didn't actually make it seem like a big thing. So you have that aspect of it. And then I also think they want subscribers, you know, like, I mean, they want people to sign up for this event. And I think they think it's a big lineup. You know, Michael Cole, well, not saying Saudi Arabia, it did tout what a strong lineup, how they're bringing some big matches on Friday at noon Eastern for this global pay-per-view event. So I think they want to get something out of it also on a WWE Network subscription level. Granted, I don't think there's anybody that they will get for this that they wouldn't get through promoting something else. But they are hoping they want to make their money from Saudi Arabia, and then they want people to go, I need to see Brock and Strowman. I mean, they're sending out emails to ex-subscribers, 99 cents for 2 months of WWE Network subscriptions, and they say, we want you back. And in our afternoon news update today on pwtorch.com, I encourage everybody, if you haven't been, to check out the new daily afternoon news updates that we're putting up every day on pwtorch.com, more news coverage than we've had in a long time. And earlier on Monday, one of the reports, or one of the items we had was, yeah, they're sending out this 99 cent for 2 months, come back in time for Crown Jewel. And one emailer, actually it was a Facebook post, but he said we could post it also on the website, said the ironic part is he canceled because of Crown Jewel being in Saudi Arabia, and then they email him trying to get him back, dangling Crown Jewel in front of him. So in some ways, it could backfire with some people too, that they're promoting it so hard, and they know where it is, especially in light of the John Oliver Last Week Tonight segment on Sunday night on HBO, where for 5 minutes, he and, you know, their team, their staff, just buried WWE for this, including a really bad PR bot showing an urn with the DX logo spray painted on it, and went into why that was tasteless. In fact, I got a whole transcript of the key segments on that and a video clip if you want to see that 5 minute segment on pwtorch.com too. It's a standalone article we put up earlier today on that. So That's my take on it, Matt. I can't imagine they're contractually obligated to give it X amount of time on Raw and SmackDown. I don't think the contract of Saudi Arabia is that granular. If it was, I think they'd be mentioning Saudi Arabia contractually. So this has to be a choice.
Yeah, it seems to me that the WWE is painted in a corner in a very complicated situation, and there's a million ways they could handle it. If you say there's 10 ways they could handle it, they're probably handling it at probably the second or third worst possible way. I think they could, you know, do the promotion, give lip service to Shawn Michaels' return, give lip service to Brother Destruction and Brock Lesnar, and then they could also be justified in maybe have promoting Evolution a little bit harder. And also promoting Survivor Series coming up. I think it just shows that WWE is still not 100% on board that that the fans and the public is justified in criticizing this Saudi Arabia show.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a legit way to interpret it. Let's go to our first call. Again, you can get on the phone banks right now, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. 85-58. We'll go to Brandon in Athens, Georgia, up first. Brandon, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, Wade, thanks for taking my call. I guess I'll begin with Bobby Lashley. Just for the simple fact that I have to give WWE credit that they at least got me at least vested a little bit in this character, that they're doing something a little different with the Leo Rush thing now. Because even us like armchair bookers at home could tell that Lashley was a clear and dry like case. You know, he is a great physical specimen, but listening to his promos is like watching paint dry. So I enjoyed the Leo Rush dynamic. Also, lastly, Undertaker. I mean, I love the guy, but every time, it seems like each time he cuts a promo now, it just feels awkward. Like I kind of get like what you said one time about someone, like a Hall of Fame anxiety kind of when I hear him cut a promo these days. It's just awkward to me. What do you think?
Go ahead, Matt. Take it first.
Well, I see it too. I don't see him being 1,000% comfortable up there. I think that was reflected in him using the same exact, you know, three words for two promos in a row, either last week or the week before. As far as the Taker thing, you know, I think we're just on a legacy tour right now. I'm not sure it can be anything more than that. I'm not sure he brings anything more in the ring or outside the ring other than the nostalgia trip.
I threw to you, Matt, because I didn't catch who Brandon you were talking about on the awkward promo, and you stuck with pronouns, Matt. You just killed me there. I was hoping for a name, so I admit that.
Sorry.
No, that's how would you know that I tuned out for like 2 seconds while looking at the phone switchboard? So anyway, Brandon, who are you talking about being awkward on the mic?
Initially I was talking about Lashley. Just how I think it's interesting how they changed the dynamic up of giving them a manager. You know, I think it's working like a little bit.
Yeah, you mentioned paint drying and Leo Rush. I will pick watching paint dry 10 out of 10 times over getting a headache listening to Leo Rush. I honestly think they pushed that too far with the mic. I think they need to have some sort of edict that says his mic is turned off during matches. I mean, I know what they're going for, but Matt, it's just. It's not like if the E is about entertainment, it's not entertaining and like, oh, I want to see him get beat up. It's just too much. And, you know, I know they're talking about mute buttons. It's like, I think people are more than reaching for mute buttons during Leo Rush segments. I think they're reaching for the remote, but maybe their minute by minute ratings breakdown tells them that. I just think it's a little too much. I like giving Lashley a spokesperson. I do wish that we heard something from Lashley explaining why he went from the smiling, happy-go-lucky guy standing up for truth, justice, and the American way, and now he's hired Leo Rush to be obnoxious, and Lashley's willing to cheat. There was no transition. It's sort of one of those things where you feel like you missed an episode or two of Raw where they explain the transformation.
Yeah, I would agree. There's no explanation except maybe Bobby Lashley is a robot. You know, I think that probably covers everything. I'm not one of these guys that thinks that Lashley was this great heel, that they need to turn him heel, but he definitely is not great at getting a character across. So that works better for a heel a lot of times. I think Leo Rush has done Bobby Lashley a lot of favors But Bobby Lashley's done himself a lot of favors by being completely dominant over his opponent the way he wasn't as a good guy, which would have helped him, you know, as a face. But I'm with you in the fact that I think we can call the Leo Rush having the microphone during the matches idea a miss. And if we can make that little adjustment, I think and Lashley keeps being dominating and keeps destroying guys and showing, you know, that physicalness and Leo getting the heat and running away from guys. I think we got a big hit on our hands, but I think you're right. It's a channel changing go away type heat from Leo on the mic sometimes.
Yeah, I think we could absolutely do without that level, that decibel level and the grating voice and all that. But I do think Lashley is better as a heel than as a babyface. But he's still stiff and cardboard, and it's a problem. Anyway, Brandon, anything else for us?
Oh yeah, you know, it's not the greatest manager work like in the world, but what's the alternative? Like having Lashley like doing what he was doing before as a face. I mean, that was like truly garbage to me. But yeah, it's a little bit over the top. Like the execution, like, you know, could be better. But yeah, but I appreciate you for taking my call again, Wade. Thank you.
Thanks, Brandon. Well, I would say alternative is to just not have Leo Rush on the mic at ringside chanting Lashley. He can just be a more traditional manager cutting a more traditional promo, and also drop the nervous ha-ha laugh thing that he does all the time too. Because I think it's more of a nervous tick in his promos than something that's effective at accomplishing the goal that he wants to as a heel manager. Anyway, yeah, Matt.
And I think, Wade, the part you may have missed was the caller talking about how Undertaker seems very forced and awkward on the mic these days, similar to a Hall of Fame speech anxiety. And that's what I was speaking to earlier. I agree with that. I think that's a great observation. Taker has not looked comfortable on the mic to the point where, you know, he was just repeating rest in peace every time he came out. And I don't know if you wanted to comment on that or not, because I think that's an interesting observation.
Yeah, well, I think Taker is just – he's playing his character right now, and his character isn't real wide-ranging. It's a narrow lane that he drives in as a character. He's delivering the greatest hits of what Undertaker is, and he doesn't seem, you know, all that invested in going much beyond that or interested in going much beyond that at this point. You know, I thought it was clunky when he said it won't just be the end of an era. It will be the end of their error.
It was a dad joke, Wade.
Yes. Is Undertaker a guy who we look to for like puns and plays on words? Undertaker doesn't want to be clever. That's not his character. He's not looking to be clever. So, I guess Ronda Rousey wrote her own line about smallpox, you know, eradicating smallpox. And I said, well, whoever wrote that for her should be fired. Well, now I don't know if I quite went that far. But I scolded whoever wrote that for her because I said it didn't sound natural. Apparently, Ronda came up with that. So I think someone else should write Ronda's promos for her at this point. Would take or whatever contributed to that line, move away from it. There's just too much cleverness and not enough authenticity in WWE promos. And I just think I'd like to see – it would be so refreshing if they just for a month said, we're not going to be clever on the microphone. Maybe one or two wrestlers, you know, who that's their thing. You know, Kevin Owens or something as a heel. But no, don't write wrestlers to be clever. We're trying to get people invested in fights and have them invested in either cheering or booing somebody, not giving them extra credit points for cleverness. So stop trying to write clever lines just because you're a writer and write dialogue that seems natural and authentic. I think people would, without consciously noticing why, enjoy and be more invested in the promos and what the promos are trying to accomplish as a result.
And Taker, like, getting that line going, yeah, man, I'm going to say that. That's great. Like, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me either if you know how much control he's had over his character over the years.
Right, yes.
Hey, if you're a fan of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which you obviously are if you're listening to this right now, check out Solomonster Sounds Off. It's a weekly show covering all the latest news in the world of wrestling, from WWE to Lucha Underground, New Japan, and everything in between, plus listener Q&A, rankings, and more. Check it out in iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or download directly from thesolomonster.com.
So the angle itself with Shawn Michaels running in and giving a super kick to Undertaker while Kane was trying to, you know, chase down Triple H on the stage, and then Undertaker sitting up. I was fine with that. It kept Hunter and Michaels from destroying and undercutting other acts, like the entire current day roster, if we can keep them off the microphone, I'm pretty happy, because I think when they're on the mic, it's so counterproductive. So I thought this was fine. I mean, just get people excited to see Kane and Undertaker beat up Hunter and Shawn, because that's what we're stuck with going into Friday, is that match. But I need to stress, this is about the worst case scenario for a Shawn Michaels return match after all his years away. On a show that people resent, in a tag match where he's a heel and booked as such, against two guys who he's going to be in charge of creating all the movement for and trying to make it watchable, which he may or may not be able to do based on, you know, working out at NXT more. Maybe he's feeling pretty good. But, Matt, this is such a huge letdown. If 2 years ago you said, oh, Michaels is going to come back in 2018, nowhere on the list would have been, as a heel, teaming up with Triple H, who plays four different characters all at once in WWE, against Undertaker and Kane, who are immobile. There was that line that Undertaker said, our match won't, he said, it won't be swift. It will be slow, agonizing pain. And I was like, you know, I'm not used to wrestlers reviewing their own matches on
Raw.
That
sounds right. Yeah, that
but
sounds
he's
right.
Absolutely right. That Triple H Undertaker match at Super Showdown wasn't swift. It was slow and agonizing. And this one likely will be too. I mean, Michaels deserved better. Michaels fans deserved better. And he's just playing a clown sidekick to Triple H in a match that people aren't that excited to see. Just big thumbs down on this, man. And I know it's what Saudi Arabia paid for, but this is why people resent. This is a much less important reason people resent this whole Saudi Arabia thing, because things that were supposed to be special and have integrity within WWE's narrative seem like they're being bought and steered in a direction away from what would be the natural course of booking in WWE of these legends.
Sure, because Shawn Michaels very credibly and very sincerely, I believe, said, you know, that he turned down the match with AJ Styles at a past WrestleMania because he wasn't going to be the same guy. He couldn't bring the same thing. And that amplifies the suspicion, you know, that it's a gigantic payday, probably, you know, maybe seven figures to get him over to Saudi Arabia. And to your point, as a fan, you know, who enjoys, you know, the narrative of professional wrestling, how many more, you know, your average fan, how many more compelling storylines could he just, you know, come up with on a sheet of paper that would be more enticing, you know, than the one he's got? Lastly, if they wanted to do this, what they could have done is really worked on Shawn Michaels talking people into the building, because out of those four people, Shawn Michaels has the best history of figuring out how to talk people into the building, in the building, in an emotional and connective way. And he has been used as, you know, the clown Shawn Michaels, the, you know, the dancing around, the one that you love so much. And it's not working so much at all.
At least we didn't get that. At least we didn't get him being just a total, you know, Doink the Clown without makeup version
right.
of Shawn.
Right. You know, it is a worst case scenario as far as the anticipation, what it could be, how it serves his legacy, almost any metric you can think of.
What we haven't talked about this yet. Evolution was last night, and they made a major announcement tonight, which is in part so Crown Jewel didn't just take all the wasn't the centerpiece and the only news making happenings on Raw. Ronda Rousey, Raw champion, Becky Lynch, SmackDown champion, one on one at Survivor Series. Is that something Becky Lynch fans are going to be upset about or happy about, Matt, anticipating what happens between now and the conclusion of that match at Survivor Series next month?
Well, you know, it strikes me on the surface as one of these meaningless super matches, you know, where everything will be built up and then everything will just go back to normal after it's over.
Matt, I have to interrupt. As Nia Jax said, it will prove once and for all which brand is superior.
That is true, because we all remember how it ended last year. I have no idea. I don't remember.
It
but
was so irrelevant.
Yeah, it was. And now that I remember it, you know, there was some other stuff that went on where Kurt Angle had to wrestle. But with this year, you know, Becky Lynch gave a little nod to her fans on Twitter and said, I wasn't planning for the fans to come with me, but you did, you know, which might kind of, you know, give a hint to her future character. It absolutely makes no sense, but it is an intriguing matchup I'd like to see. But at the same time, like, it doesn't really serve either character well at all, other than we need to get the women champions together for Survivor Series. But it is a super match, and I think it does create some interest.
Are fans going to cheer Becky or cheer both? Or are they going to find a way to get Ronda, who's super over and beloved by the WWE fan base, notwithstanding some fans siding with Nikki and Brie, especially some women and girls last night who know them more from reality TV, and Ronda's been kind of mean and a bully and less fun and delightful as the Bellas have been on the reality show. I think we had some of that going on Sunday night. But overall, I think Ronda is very, very popular, and her push is going really well. To me, I look at this, and I'm like, did they turn Becky heel with an eye on this match? And the idea was, and that's why they stuck with it. That's why the announcers continue to say Becky, bad things about Becky and how the locker room resents her, and she's taking shortcuts, and they don't buy her complaining, and it is just whining and sour grapes. And all the things that credible announcers like Renee Young, who generally is directed to speak in ways that the fans are nodding along with, are they just really going to push really hard to try to get Becky as a heel so Ronda doesn't end up looking bad? And who knows how Ronda reacts if a Survivor Series crowd is booing her and cheering Becky? You know, Charlotte took it well. She's been around the business long enough to know what the game is, and she might not love it, but she's not going to be unprofessional or lose it. Ronda, sometimes I get the vibe that, you know, she's in part of the, it's part of the reason why fans love her and connect with her, is she's not, she doesn't consider this a work, you know, I mean, and obviously right, in certain ways it is, but it's not like, I don't know that she just let it be water off her back. If fans are booing her. Matt, your thoughts on all that?
Well, I think that, first of all, I think Charlotte should be commended. I think it was apparent that very early on, she knew she would be Roman Reigns, and she did the best she could in that situation. I don't think this was all done to lead to the Survivor Series match, because I don't think they think that much about the Survivor Series main event. As far as who they'll cheer for, you know, and you can quote me on this, I think Evolution last night could have been called Elevation, because every single wrestler who was in a high profile match was elevated last night. And to that end, I think we're going to see the highest, loudest dueling chants for a women's match we've ever heard with Ronda and Becky, and I think that's good for business. So I think we're going to hear "Let's go, Ronda, Becky Lynch." I think that's what we're going to hear, and it's going to make for a good atmosphere.
I think fans are more inclined to cheer for Ronda, even if they're Becky fans, than fans were inclined to cheer for Charlotte, even if they were Charlotte fans before the Becky the attempt to turn Becky heel, because it's a one-off special attraction match, and I don't think people will look at Ronda as holding Becky back from what she deserves. I think people see Ronda on one brand and Becky on another. They're both champs, and they get this really high-profile featured match at Survivor Series. So I don't think there's that kind of a framework of resentment built into this situation. So I think you're right. I don't think there'll be a rejection of Ronda. I think fans will embrace both. But I'm curious to see what they do with the storyline over the next 4 weeks.
But they've got to be very careful about that, Wade, because with the wrong promo by Ronda, with the right, you know, momentum behind Becky, it's going to be a slippery slope to maybe, you know, Ronda being seen as part of the machine and part of the plan, and cheering for Becky is cool. So they need to be very careful with this if they want Ronda to maintain her momentum as the top female face in wrestling today.
Yeah, well put. What do you think of the brackets for the World Cup? I'll recap them here for those who didn't see Raw. Seth Rollins, Bobby Lashley, and Kurt Angle and Dolph Ziggler. The winner of each of those matches faces off in the semifinals on one bracket. On the other side, Jeff Hardy against The Miz, heel face matchup, and Randy Orton against Rey Mysterio, heel face matchup. The winner of that bracket then facing the winner of the other bracket. I like the Ziggler-Kurt Angle match. I think Ziggler gives Angle the best chance at a really good match. And Angle, you know, being sent away from the GM duties has hopefully given him a chance to kind of get in wrestling shape and feel good about himself. He's not going in on emergency duty because of a, you know, rain situation like happened previously with the mumps. So I like that. Seth and Lashley is fine. You know, it could be on Raw. It might be a future pay-per-view main event if Lashley gets over. But I think that is a chance to be a good match. Hardy Miz, it's fine. I mean, doesn't jump out off the page. And Orton Ray is interesting. I don't know where they go with this. I can make a case for a lot of different semifinals and finals. I think one thing this tournament has going for it is a lack of predictability.
Well, I think we clearly know who the winner is already, and that's John Cena. John Cena is without a doubt the winner of the World Cup. Give him the title. But let's make the fans happy, right? Wrestling fans are fickle. If we have a great card, sadly, they're going to forget about a lot of this other stuff. And let's go for a feel-good Kurt Angle, Rey Mysterio finals. I think that would be fantastic.
Yeah, the way Kurt Angle talked, I got the feeling that he's going to win this, but it also very well could be setting up, you know, Orton taking away Angle, having this dream moment. I mean, I think they could go a number of ways. I think the least likely. Well, I'll ask you. I'll lock in what my answer is going to be. But who do you think is least likely? Seth, Lashley, Angle, Ziggler, Hardy, Miz, Orton, Ray. There's two people that I think are the least likely to win, and one jumps out.
I think Seth is not going to win because of how involved he is with everything else. I think he's pretty not likely. I think Ziggler is not likely. I think those are the two that jump out at me that I think about because Hardy. I don't think Jeff Hardy is likely to win it either. So I think maybe, you know, Orton with a good chance. You know, I think WWE likes him, probably likes him up against a face in the finals. I don't think they brought Ray back to lose in the first round. I think my pick for it is the one I want. I'm going to go with Ray and Angle.
Yeah, I think the least likely is Jeff Hardy. I just can't see what they would do with it afterwards. Jeff Hardy's the best in the world. And it's like, okay, what do you do with that? It doesn't really work for setting up a world title match. It doesn't really seem like something Hardy would brag about. I just think personality-wise, it doesn't fit. I'm with you on Seth. I think that Seth doesn't need it. But if they're going all in with Seth, he wins World Cup, he beats Brock Lesnar if Lesnar beats Strowman, and you just go all in, and now Seth gets the mega push. So I think Seth is unlikely to win. But if he does win, I think that will be the reason why. I think Randy Orton, to build him up for SmackDown world title shots against either AJ or Bryan, they could have Orton win, especially if they have him do something dastardly to Kurt Angle in the finals in order to win, to get heat on him. I don't think Ziggler will win, but he, you know, sort of made a case for maybe he's going to, if he won, they could have him just obnoxiously brag about that incessantly. And so, you know,
it's the same argument for Miz too. Same argument.
Totally. Yes. And you can just see Miz doing that, forever. So, yeah, a lot of possibilities there, including Ray. So,
and the fact, you know, you look at this bracket and, you know, well, a couple of these matches are going to be like 3 seconds long, you know?
Yes. Yep.
And so I think the Seth match stinks like that to me where, you know, Ambrose will get involved and Seth will run out of the ring to chase down Ambrose and that'll be it. You know, and Lashley's in it now. So, of course, conventional wisdom is not Lashley the substitute wins. But at the same time, you know, they're always looking to build credibility behind that guy. So I guess it's kind of fun that we don't know who's going to win or who's going to be in the finals right now.
And by the way, before everyone pats Cena on the back for taking a stand, Cena needs to explain why he took a stand. He needs to. He can't just not be on the show and get the same amount of credit than if he actually explains why. And because otherwise, it's a safe PR move. It's self-preservation.
He didn't do it. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. I don't mean to keep interrupting.
Yeah, that's okay. He was called out by John Oliver, and it was embarrassing. And he has more to lose because he's trying to make it outside of WWE, and he doesn't need WWE. So he can take that stand. He's set for life, worth tens of millions of dollars, and he needs to not have this dark cloud over him if he made that decision and not be the target of another HBO skewering like that. So to me, Cena did the only pragmatic thing he could do. But it seems purely selfish in, oh, I need to preserve my image. I want to hear him not bury WWE because he's probably too much of a company man to do that, but in a public forum, say, I don't want to go to that country and here's why, to perform. The problem is he might see that not just as burying WWE, but also his colleagues who did go. But I think he's going to get credit for something without actually doing anything other than a very safe PR move of not going. So I'm not taking a negative stance on him. So don't tweet storm me about that. I'm not saying he should be criticized for this, but I'm saying to get the full credit as a hero of the moment, speak up. Don't just withdraw and have WWE deliver it via storyline. Actually speak up and make some sort of comment that is respectful of your employer and your colleagues, but explains why you took the stand so that it isn't just him avoiding bad PR, Matt.
And it wasn't that they even explained it. They kind of gave this halfway explanation. He didn't earn it, so he's not in it. But, you know, to your point about, yes, absolutely, he should not get credit as this figure who is altruistic and put the needs of the world above his own needs to wrestle, because we know, we all know why he didn't do it. I mean, he didn't do it because he, you know, he wants to be an actor, and Hollywood is different than the WWE. And he knows if he does it, especially that John Oliver called him out, he would find it a lot tougher to create the relationships to have the career that he wants, and which also makes it the same reason why he will never come out and say it, because there's no way for him to convincingly say, hey, it's not good for me to do as an actor, but it's fine for those wrestlers.
Yeah. Well, I if I were just thinking on my feet here and taking on that as a challenge, I would say Cena can say, hey, I'm at a different stage in my career, and I'm not part of the full-time crew. And I think people would look at it differently with me going there for a World Cup tournament. They didn't promise a one-on-one match that I was withdrawing from. I was just in a tournament. I didn't have an opponent named. And it just – I think there's a way for him to do it without seeming like he's burying the people who went, and kind of say, you know, I went there once I don't know. I mean, it is a minefield. I mean, as I try to think on my feet, it's a minefield for him to bring it up. So, but nevertheless, I if he doesn't work hard at some sort of statement in some forum, be it Twitter or the Tonight Show or some interview that they orchestrate, a quote for ESPN or something, I just think I'm you know, limiting how much praise I heap upon him for taking the stand. Because it you know, had he not been isolated by HBO when he was a full-time wrestler and he did this, that'd be different. But since he was targeted, it does seem like he had the most to lose and most to fear.
And it's something to keep an eye on, because he is going to be asked about it. And when he is asked about it, let's hope he has a much better answer than the people that happen to run across TMZ who can sell the Saudi Arabia show as a pragmatic thing for WWE to be doing.
I looked at the clock. I can't believe how long we've gotten that talking. There's a lot to talk about on the show. I got to get to my inside correspondent. It's getting really late for him over in Charlotte. So we're going to wrap up segment one here. We'll come back. If we didn't get to your call, please email. Just type up your comments or your question. We'll get to it in our mailbag segment coming up later. We're going to break now and come back with our on-site correspondent and see what it was like in the building. All right, we are now joined by our correspondent, Ben, who attended Raw in Charlotte tonight. Ben, where are you from? Charlotte proper or somewhere outside in that region?
Hendersonville, North Carolina, right below Asheville.
All right, cool. Well, appreciate you taking time to talk to us about the experience of attending Raw tonight. I'm just going to get this out of the way early. Crown Jewel, was there booing? What was the crowd? Did the crowd react at all when it got brought up or logos were brought up? Did you assess anything as far as that goes?
Surprisingly enough, from what I saw, no one had any negative reaction towards her, any that I seen. They had music when they were playing the promo, but it didn't seem like anybody was too offended.
And it was interesting, too. They had the logo, like, on the stage the whole show. And I think that's a little different than at Evolution, where the logo pops up, and it's, like, the first time fans see it. And so there's sort of, if you are against it, in our online polling, the majority of people are against WWE running a show there, and WWE is certainly self-conscious of it not mentioning Saudi Arabia on TV, Ben, the whole 3+ hours. They didn't mention it once. They called it a global pay-per-view. But when the logo's just there all the time, there's less of that chance to kind of, in a united way, react. It's also possible the crowd just is made up of people who, less than other crowds lately, care. But that's interesting. I'm glad that you were there to tell us that it wasn't a huge, huge deal during the program.
Yeah, I think it was because they had played it so many times during the night, because they had it. You know, they listed off every match, so it kept popping up. So maybe if it was just once or twice, you know, maybe people would have reacted a different way. But
yeah. Okay. So talking about the attendance in the building, was it packed house, nearly packed? Were there empty seats?
I was packed. It was elbows to elbows, so it was full.
All right, cool. And would you say it was a crowd that was engaged throughout, or were there some ups and downs in terms of how engaged they were and how loud they were?
Some of the matches started off pretty slow, but then eventually the crowd got into pretty much all of them. Going back to, I believe they did have a couple sections tiled off or tarped off. I think they had a bunch of, like, the top ones tarped off, but all the other sections are completely full. People were elbow to elbow in there.
Oh, okay. Yep. Was there a match of the night in terms of having the most crowd heat, Lashley Balor, or the women's match that went went a decent amount of time, maybe 13, 14 minutes? Yeah, Jinder and Elias in a quickie, the three-way tag match that AOP were involved in, Nia Jax and Ember Moon, Revival and 205 Live, and then Apollo Crews and Dolph Ziggler. Among those, nothing jumps out to me that I would guess was the one the crowd was most into, but I guess I'd put my money on the 10-woman tag match.
The 10-woman tag match? They get into that. They didn't react to Trish Stratus how I thought they would. I thought they'd really appreciate that Trish was back, but they didn't pop as loud as I thought. But Lita really got a pop when she did that moonsault. But as far as the best match of the night, I don't know. But the best segment of the night would probably be the Brock Lesnar-Braun Strowman segment. Everyone pretty much loved that, but it was right at the beginning.
Yeah. So match-wise, I mean, most of the matches were relatively short other than Lashley-Finn went almost 10 minutes and the women's tag went more than 10 minutes. But you said that some of them went a little slow, but overall crowd was into it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Matt, jump in.
There was a lot of fun. There's some good funny moments. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut
you off. Oh, no, go ahead. Yeah, no problem at all. Jump in.
But probably my favorite moment was when Elias was backstage. I thought that was pretty funny, and the crowd really reacted to that, so it was a good one.
Where does Elias rank on the most popular wrestler of the night who appeared in front of the crowd?
I mean, but one of the most hated, not the most liked, but he was funny. He popped the crowd a few times.
That's interesting, because I assume Elias is being framed as a babyface at this point, feuding with Baron Corbin. But you're saying that the crowd, you seem, reacted to him as a heel?
Oh, yeah. When he was backstage and he ran into that girl, I'm not sure what her name was, that really got the crowd there.
Interesting. Yeah, go ahead, Matt. What have you got for Ben?
Sure. Real quick, and I've gotten this wrong before. Watching at home is different than being there live, but it appeared to me that before the Triple H and Shawn Michaels came out, the crowd was, you know, dead, pun intended, for Taker and Kane after they made their entrance. What was that scene like for that last moment of Raw? Was it intense? Was it boring? Did you want to go home? What was the overall feel in the arena?
Oh, no, I love Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels is my favorite wrestler, so it was probably the best ending that I could ask for. But it was great. It was great to be there to see The Undertaker.
Did the crowd react to DX as baby faces or heels, or just sort of stars who are gracing us with their presence because, you know, you don't get to see them at a lot of Raws? So how would you characterize the reaction to DX in contrast to Kane and Undertaker?
I think I don't know. I'm a little biased, but I think, yes, DX popped a little bit better than the Undertaker-Kane ones. But the Undertaker-Kane was pretty loud. It was loud.
Now, Shawn Michaels sneak into the ring and, you know, almost blindsiding Undertaker with a super kick. That's a heel move. And then begging off, as they did, is a heel move. And I understand you're a Michaels fan, and a storyline doesn't have to dictate that. It changes that at all. But as a Michaels fan, is this the ideal scenario for somebody who said he'd never return? You know, if he didn't even go, if I do, it'll have to be for something special. Is this like a scenario that you would want, setting aside the awkwardness of Saudi Arabia and the weird time slot and not being out of WrestleMania or SummerSlam? Is this a match that you're, as a Michaels fan, that you genuinely are happy with and like because of the star power and legends involved? Or would you have rather seen him against, younger, more agile wrestlers or a different type of matchup?
In a perfect world, I wish, you know, maybe it wasn't a tag match, but the people involved in it make it perfect. So I couldn't ask for anything else.
Are you going to be watching Crown Jewel live or on delay on Friday?
Definitely.
Yeah. Matt, anything else you want to ask Ben?
Yeah, sure. As an overall show, I know that sometimes the shows can drag and sometimes they're paced really well. You know, your third hour, you had, you know, some interesting things. And how was the overall show? Was it a show where the crowd was engaged the entire time?
I feel like the matches ran a little bit long and I was up there in the nosebleeds. It was a little cramped, but I mean, the crowd hung in there, and the last hour just flew by because they just had so many high spots going on. It was great.
How did they react to the 205 Live guys and the Revival? Was the crowd just kind of waiting for bigger things to happen, or was that a high spot match that the crowd got into?
Revival, they didn't get any sort of reaction from what I heard. Like, and maybe a few people, but it was kind of sad.
Was I just going to ask of you as far as that goes?
205 guys?
No. I'll move on to this one. Roman Reigns seemed to be the most popular guy in the building, but he wasn't in the building. But when they talked about him and showed video features for him, the crowd chanted for him. Did it seem like there was a lot of love in that building for what Roman is going through, and the crowd was eager to chant for him? It even stopped Michael Cole in his tracks at one point.
Oh, yeah, completely different. I was in the WrestleMania in Florida 2 years ago, and I watched the Raw, and seeing that and what it's gone to now, it's just complete 180, and I'm happy because, you know, it showed that people really do care about the person and not just the character.
How would you grade the reaction to Seth Rollins as the new top babyface star on Raw? When he walked out, I know there's a big storyline going on with him, and so that adds to it, but did it feel like, yeah, this is who people came to see and they're giving him that top star reaction, or does he seem like a B+, A- star, and there was a void, and it was sort of Brock Lesnar or Braun Strowman who filled that spot instead?
Yeah, it definitely feels like he's not at the top spot. I'm from Iowa, so I love Seth Rollins. But, yeah, he's going on with something with Dean Ambrose right now, and I can't wait to see where it goes. Cause I like the angle that they got built up with them being the tag champs and not being cohesive. I think that could lead to some good TV.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously when Dean came out, mostly boos. Were there any cheers for Dean when he stepped out through the Shield in the stand, this place where the Shield come out through the stands? Was there any sense that there were some rebellious fans cheering for Dean against Seth, or just because they like him?
No, Dean was pretty much the heel. Everyone was booing Dean.
Yeah,
because he wouldn't say anything. Be a coward.
Yes.
It was a nice touch that the mic worked. You could tell the mic was working because he tapped on it. So you thought he was going to say something, but then he didn't. I thought that was a really nice touch.
So
he's made more of an impact now without saying anything than he did before. I mean, I feel like that's saying so.
Well, yeah, that's true in a lot of walks of life. So most over guy of the night, biggest pop, Seth Rollins, Braun Strowman, Finn Balor. Who gets the nod, or was it a group of people who were too close to call?
I would say DX and Undertaker's tie between them.
Oh, okay. Yep. And then how did Braun compare to Seth? Because they're the two wrestlers now being pushed as top male baby faces in terms of full-time guys in the world title picture and IC title picture. How did the pops for them compare? It's kind of tough because they're so far apart on the show and the crowd was kind of in a different place, endurance-wise. But anything you can characterize as far as that goes?
Well, I feel like Seth Rollins' one was bright louder. Everyone chanted, burn it down. Popped the roof, almost knocked the roof off.
Did you feel like you wanted to see Ronda Rousey in person in the in the ring? Did it seem like anybody noticed that?
Ronda Rousey?
Yeah.
I actually didn't really notice that. No.
Yeah.
So. It's crazy, but yeah, I would have loved to see her. Like,
did they advertise her, and did they advertise anything that you're aware of? And how did they do on actually matching up to that advertising?
Not that I'm aware of. No, I didn't.
Yeah,
I didn't really look at the card. I just kind of went to it because I knew Shawn Michaels was going to be there, and had to go see it.
And you wanted to be correspondent on this show. How does that rank compared to seeing Shawn Michaels being on the Wade Keller post show?
How does that rank?
Yeah. Like, are you more excited to see Shawn Michaels or more excited to be on with Matt and me today?
Oh, I'm excited to be on with you. Definitely.
All right, I'll take that and run with it.
I can't believe that you were on the podcast with Stone Cold. It's so awesome. You must be really out there grinding to have what you platform that you have. And I just say keep going, man. And I've listened to your podcast and I like.
I appreciate that very much. So was there anything either before Raw that you saw, and did anything happen after Raw went off the air? Because we were left with just the angle with Undertaker sitting up.
Yes, I actually took a video of it. It's Shawn Michaels kind of acted like he was going to go attack the Undertaker, but then pulled back, and him and Triple H walked out, and then Undertaker got down on one knee and did his, symbolic pose, and then they left, and then it was a tag team match. Braun Strowman and Seth Rollins versus
Dolph and Drew. Let me guess.
Versus Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler. Yeah.
And yeah, how did that? How long did that last roughly? And how did it go?
It lasted about 10 minutes, and it went good. Braun Strowman and Seth Rollins went over.
Cool. And I guess that's a good point to ask because it's more of a apples to apples comparison. How did the crowd react to Seth and Braun comparatively since they were out there together? Any sense of one being more over?
They loved it. Oh, yeah.
They were both over.
I don't really see them as a tag team, but yeah, definitely. I mean, some people had left at that point, but it was still a lot of people cheering for him.
Yeah. And anything before Raw went live?
Before Raw, no. I didn't make it before the pre-show. I just got there right as Brock Lesnar was coming out.
Okay.
That's what I got.
Sounds good. If anybody listening went early enough to see what happened before Raw, drop us an email and we'll add it to our report. Did you notice merchandise in particular, like an abundance of certain wrestler merchandise in the crowd at all?
No, the shirts and everything that everybody was wearing, it was just every wrestler out there. There was really no favorite. And I guess that's just how many different diverse wrestlers they got nowadays, because they had Adam Cole, Braun Strowman, Usos, all over the place. That old school shirts, new school.
I think just as WWE likes it, you know, parody and a little bit for everybody. Very good, Matt. Do you have any final question for Ben?
No, I think we're good. I think Ben answered all the questions we had, except that he got there just in time, so he missed main event and got there right for Brock Lesnar to come in.
Yes. Ben, I thank you so much. Appreciate you talking to us. Safe travels.
No problem. You have a good one, Wade.
Appreciate your help. Yeah, absolutely. All right, we are back, and it is time to dip into the mailbag. But before we do that, Matt, tell people about the projects you're involved with in the podcast world and anything else you want people to know about you, including maybe social media, way to reach out to you through social media.
Absolutely. Thanks for asking, Wade. You can reach out to me via Twitter at Matt Kuhn Music or Instagram at Matt Kuhn Music. And I've done a lot of podcasts with a lot of wrestlers, from Terry Runnels to Medusa to Dutch Mantel. And that all comes from me working on Conrad Thompson's podcast and him doing such a good job of showing me the ropes of the podcast world. I've kind of settled on two, which is Truth with Consequences, which is the brand new Vince Russo podcast, which is a little different than you think if you want to give it a shot. And of course, Why It Ended with Robbie E, where we interview people that had a run and we ask why it ended. And we just had a great interview with Daniel Pewter. And, you know, I think we're going to have MVP on this week, but we really get into the whole story of their ascent and then find out exactly where it ended. And, sadly, I am no longer with Johnny Fairplay's Survivor podcast. We have decided that it would be better without me and I would be better without it. And I think we're both right on that stance, but go ahead and give Johnny a listen. If you like Survivor, that's Survivor NSFW. Even though I'm no longer on it, we're still friends. And, he was the first person to give me a chance to host a podcast beyond just doing music or doing production. And so I'm always grateful to Johnny for kind of giving me a chance to get my foot in the door. And now that I've kind of busted it open, I'll always kind of thank him and remember him for that opportunity.
Johnny Fairplay, the star maker.
Absolutely. Yes. There's no doubt about it.
All right. Let's. How about social media? Do you want to put that out there?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm at Matt Kuhn
maybe
Music.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you want to follow our podcast at Russo Kuhn TWC or at Why It Ended. And, you know, check them out. There's a lot of wrestling podcasts out there. It's hard to know what to listen to. You know, give us a chance. I know that at the PW podcast, they seem to enjoy both the podcasts. And definitely check out that site, which is, I think, a Torch site where they kind of review all the podcasts so you kind of know what to listen to. But they seem to like us, so that makes me feel good.
PWPodcasts.com. Yeah, one of the sister sites of PW Torch along with MMATorch.com. Let's dive into the mailbag, and we'll go to Bradley T. from North Carolina. He said, guess it's official. John Cena wanted out of Crown Jewel. Is there a chance that the location could still change before Friday, or is it 100% confirmed they'll be in Saudi Arabia? On a side note, I can't think of a better heel duo than Lashley and Leo Rush. Both are made for the role they're playing, and the crowd reactions they've been receiving reminds me of the heat Tommaso Ciampa gets in NXT. I'm glad they're filling the John Cena void in the upcoming World Cup tournament, or as he put it, I changed his wording. I shouldn't have. Now I get why he did that. He goes, the void in the upcoming American Cup tournament. I read that. I'm like, well, he missed. It's the World Cup, so I'll say it correctly. I'm like, oh, no, he's being clever. Matt, I think Bradley's a little higher on Lashley and Leo than I am, but I don't think he's crazy to think that. I think they are in the best role that they should be in. I just want them to augment it a bit to be more heelish but less obnoxious, and I think that is absolutely possible. As for Saudi Arabia, I mean, I think it's 100% barring world events in the next 4 days, and if that happens, I don't see them being able to relocate the show on short notice. Not mentioning Saudi Arabia is not hedging on whether they're going to run it there. That's just not wanting to draw attention to it, and perhaps an edict from the networks or sponsors. And on that, I'm not sure.
Yeah, there's a better chance of Sami Zayn winning the World Cup managed by Paul Heyman than there is of them moving it. So I'd give that a 0.0% chance. As for Lashley, it's always interesting to hear other viewpoints and take a step back and say, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm not going to do that here. I think, you know, Lashley's in a great position. I think we're underplaying how dominant he's been as a heel. I think that is the key to his character. I think Leo is there for icing on the cake, and you don't want a cake that's all icing. So we have to be kind of careful about how his character's used. I love the running away. I love him jumping all around and giving him heat and talking for him. But I, once again, if you turn the mic off when he's, as you said, when you turn the mic off while Lashley's wrestling, more people will be watching the match.
Yes, yes. All right, Kyle from St. Louis. I liked the turn last week, but wasn't sure if Elias was going to make it a good babyface. After seeing it in action, I have to say the turn worked for me. Where are you on Elias's turn and his upside, Matt?
I think the Elias turn was fine. I think it was going to happen anyway. You know, the caller we had that talked about how, you know, Elias was over as a heel live, you know, that's the opposite of my experience. I think my experience is that the fans love Elias until he turns on them, and they were ready for that turn. I think Elias, I'm not as high on him as some others are, but I definitely think he's one of the better homegrown talents to ever come out of developmental. His improvement on guitar and in the ring and on the promo, it just keeps getting better and better. When you see a guy improve like that, you never want to limit where he can be. Will he be a future world champion? I would say probably at some point, unless something terrible happens. But I probably later rather than sooner. But yeah, he's seems to have it, and he seems to have a connection. And he seems to be able, he seems to be willing to put the work in to improve in the areas he needs to.
I looked up his age because I thought he was right around 30, but I didn't want to be wrong on that. And he is 30. He's got years to go before he will be relied upon to be in his prime. He is the type of character Vince McMahon just loves, you know, like as a upper mid card, steady, charismatic, comfortable on camera, versatile as a performer. And he's solid in the ring. I think we all want to see him take it to the next level in the ring. Wrestlers have done that in the past who are at the stage that he's at, Miz among them. So I think Elias is going to be around for a while. And
you know, as a musician, I will say that.
Oh yeah.
His. You know, I teach guitar all day. I've taught 10 lessons today. You know, and his improvement as a musician shows. It's a bellwether to me. About his dedication. While everybody else is going out, he is staying at home, or he's staying in the hotel. He's practicing. That dude's getting better and better. He's less nervous. He's more comfortable with that instrument. He's doing more things. He's a lot cleaner playing. So obviously he's working hard. If he's working that hard on his guitar playing, I know he's working that hard on his promos and his wrestling. So I wasn't as big on others when he first started, but man, you can never push aside that kind of improvement because you know it's not magic.
Now, what if he just stays exactly where he is as a wrestler and turns into a much better guitar player? In 5 years, will you come back and criticize him for maybe not striking a balance between getting better at both?
You know, absolutely. I think he's on his way to being a great guitar player. And yeah. It would be funny, though, if you know, he just becomes this giant great famous musician who used to wrestle.
Yes, you know? Totally. Like The Rock, you know, where it's like, oh, yeah, he wrestled once, didn't he?
Yeah, he like Jesse Ventura. Like, he happened to be a wrestler before he was the biggest star. Like, but, you know, at the same time, I can see why people like him. It was the right time to turn. One thing my son noticed was they switched the guitars out before he hit him with the guitar.
Oh.
So that he hit him with the guitar with no strings on it, which I think is a positive step because there's so many X factors when you hit someone with the guitar. And, you know, when they gimmick the guitars, I was told recently how they do it. You know, they take the braces out and they glue it back together with the balsa wood in the back. So the guitars he plays, watch him now because he's playing much better guitars than he was before. So he's going to switch about if he hits somebody with it. He's not going to play the same one that he hits someone with.
That's cool insight. I like that. Just not just how they gimmick the guitar, but like noticing he's playing better guitars and he's playing better, and that you've got respect for his improvement. All right.
Absolutely.
Up next, Zach B. says, I know this is a Raw recap show, but I just got to say Evolution was outstanding last night. I think it was the best pay-per-view of the year. Becky and Charlotte stole the show. Like Bruce Mitchell said on the VIP roundtable, I too thought Charlotte was going to win when she hulked her way out of the rubble, so I legit jumped out of my recliner when Charlotte failed to answer the 10 count after the powerbomb. That brings me to tonight, Ronda Rousey versus Becky Lynch at Survivor Series. Yes, please. I cannot wait to see it. I have a feeling the crowd's going to be torn, though. Everybody loves Ronda. She's definitely over, but there's over and there's Becky Lynch over. I don't see any way she can play the heel anymore after last night, especially. How do you see them playing this rivalry out? And do you think Ronda is going to get booed when she beats the champ? Matt, first things first, is it inevitable that Ronda beats Becky at Survivor Series?
It's not because it's not important. You know, like, I guess it's inevitable because you have, now I'm going to contradict myself. It's inevitable in the fact that you want to keep Ronda strong. You know, it's not the most important thing in the world, but, I think Becky is going to be strong whether she wins or loses. She's got such a swell of support right now. As for Evolution last night, I would agree it was a great pay-per-view. I would agree that, you know, in some stance, it's a little bit, the whole buildup and the whole presence of it, the presentation is a little bit condescending to women in a way. And you can tell how important it was because today on Raw, instead of having a bunch of issues that stemmed from that pay-per-view, you had a 10 women match, you know? So I'm not sure how much of a difference maker it was for the overall scene in women's wrestling, but it was a great pay-per-view. It was way better than I thought it would be. And I think the finish was right for Becky. And I think it leads to what we were talking about earlier. They need to be careful because we don't want Ronda to be booed yet.
There's a chance that if they play their cards right, Becky can become an even bigger star. I mean, I almost think it's inevitable. I know I can't say it's inevitable because they could actually diminish her if Ronda just goes out there and they don't treat it as big of a deal as they should. And Ronda beats her and they sort of treat it like a foregone conclusion. And then Becky goes back to the B show and acts like a B champion. So they could hurt her. I don't expect that to happen. I think Becky, through several weeks of hype for Survivor Series in the actual match, I think there's a way that she comes out of this with added momentum. I don't know how they can have her be a heel coming out of this because the harder they try, the more the Becky fans are going to push back. But either just in general, if you're a Becky Lynch fan, yeah, I mean, they're not going to spend a Ronda loss on Becky at Survivor Series. I just don't see that. But if she has a really competitive match and then maybe there's some shenanigans to protect her a bit, maybe with Charlotte or the next rival for Ronda. You know, some of the Four Horsewomen come out and maybe help Ronda win. And Ronda says, that's not how I do things around here. And that's how Becky has an out. I think you can sit here and spitball a lot of different ideas of how they can get out of the match, but also propel both women to ongoing storylines afterwards. I think Becky can come out of this just sharing the spotlight one-on-one with Ronda as a bigger star. She goes in, does it, and then she leaves and is back on SmackDown as a champ, having hopefully been a credible opponent who took Ronda to the limit and only lost because of shenanigans. And I'm not usually for shenanigans in champ versus champ type matches, but Survivor Series is a gimmick, and I think it is prudent to do that in this situation for the sake of Becky and to help promote Ronda to her next feud.
You know, Becky is in very high company when you think about historically where she is this time of year. You know, it always, you know, Daniel Bryan, Stone Cold Steve Austin, these people, you know, that the fans get behind and rebel, you know, a little bit, but just get behind someone. And there's a groundswell. Becky seems to be on a path where come WrestleMania, they might change some booking around her. And you know how, you know, the WWE hates to change their booking. You know, of course, like you said, there's a chance she could be diminished. You know, they could put her in the Wyatt family or something, you know. But I look for Becky Lynch to continue to maybe be one of the biggest stories of 2018. Mm-hmm. I'm not this giant Becky Lynch fan, but man, there is no denying the connection she has made with the fans and the fact that it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, regardless of the booking. WWE would be well advised to just go ahead and get behind her. But I would predict that's going to happen after whatever they plan for her at the Rumble.
We go to Bick S, who says, "Hey, Wade, I love the show. Did you notice how awkward Renee felt when the camera was on the announce team and Cole was saying he is disgusted with Dean and called him a coward and so on? Do you think she looked dumb not defending her husband?" I was thinking about this. This is not great for Renee if they're going to acknowledge that she's married to Dean and to have Dean be this despicable heel. And Renee has to toe the babyface line, and deservedly so, because that's who she is. It is a little awkward. I mean, I think the only thing they can do is minimize the references to it, but have a little shot that, you know, Corey Graves takes at her, you know, now and then as a wink to the audience that knows it and is thinking about it, but not draw a ton of attention to it. And I thought Renee handled it well a couple weeks ago when she just said, "Hey, I do my job and I'm my own person. And you know, Dean does his thing and he's his own person and people shouldn't think we're one and the same and go about their lives, their professional honor lives." But it even with that, it's awkward.
It's very awkward, and it's 2018 because, you know, it's 2018, so people know that, you know, at the end of the day, Rusev and Lana are going to go home and have dinner together in their house, and they know that Dean Ambrose and Renee are going to go home and have dinner together. So one thing for sure is they need a plan, and I don't think they have a plan yet. I don't think there's any doubt that the Dean turn was propelled, you know, by the unfortunate thing that happened to Roman Reigns. So they might not have it figured out yet. I think ideally, you know, ideally Renee Young turns into a heel announcer during Dean Ambrose matches. You know, she takes a blind eye to reality and supports her husband during those matches, not really over the top, but you know, where people know she's the wife. She can't pretend she's the wife. She can't play it down. They've got to come up with some kind of plan. I think that's probably the best idea.
She could also recuse herself and just turn. She goes, I have a conflict of interest. I am not going to comment, and I hope you guys respect it. And they have a guest announcers for Dean segments. I don't know. Turn off her mic.
Yeah, they but, you know, they need – it's a lot like what you talk about with NXT, and they don't have any kind of – narrative that explains why people get brought up from NXT to WWE, and just a simple explanation will do. And a simple explanation of where Renee stands would really actually enhance the show, could enhance Dean's character, and also give Renee some more wiggle room to kind of become the announcer that we all know she can be.
All right, up next, Stephen G. from Jacksonville, Florida. Just a quick thought on the Ambrose-Rollins angle. Does it seem that both men are just going through the motions? From TV, it was clear the audience is hot for the story, and Rollins is giving a best effort, but it just doesn't feel real. I felt that Rollins' promo, while passionate, just felt forced. He had to make sure he hit his points, called Dean a lunatic, and then, of course, reiterate Roman has leukemia. As a fan, I'm interested in where they take this story. That's what WWE wants, right? But it still doesn't seem right like it should. I'm sure it's an emotional time for everyone involved, so I wanted to get your and your guests' perspective. In my mind, tonight just proved that they went too quickly with the turn and the angle. Keep up the phenomenal work. Well, thank you, Steven. I mean, I wasn't comfortable with doing the angle in the timing that they did it. I thought it should have, you know, it's time to put the promoter hype machine off to the side for a week. They could have easily done an angle this week and ended up in the same place by the end of the show, or promote, you know, Seth and Dean next week, talking, you know, being on the show. I don't think there was any rush. When you look at the Crown Jewel lineup, absolutely no reason to rush it. So I'm still against it. And I think that it felt exploitative. So Matt, you can speak on that and also talk about how you felt about how Roman is still a presence on the show. And there's part of me thinking, man, Roman's still getting pushed and he's not on the show. You know, and like, will that backfire a little bit on Roman if fans, now not this week, but if they keep this up, will fans think, okay, the person, man, I really, really want him to be fine, get better. 100% of course. But from a character on a TV show standpoint, does WWE have to worry about it? And then there's the other, you know, like seeming like they keep pushing him too much and it's overshadowing other things. Now this week, I can also say, my God, at least they didn't just discard him and forget about him. You know, like, well, until he's ready, we're not going to talk about him again. And that would have felt tasteless, too. I feel like they're walking a fine line. All that said, I thought one of the highlights of Raw tonight was those kids wishing Roman luck after Roman had visited the hospital. Put all the business strategy and WWE and the baggage they bring on some of these things to the table. If you set all that aside, I thought that was super touching, having the kids essentially return goodwill wishes to Roman. And I thought that was an emotional segment, poignant and well-produced.
Well, I agree. I thought that was a great segment and really well-placed. I don't think that they're going to turn on the character, because they weren't going with the mythological Roman Reigns character. They were going with the real guy, you know, and to kind of give benefit to WWE, there's no real template to how to handle this particular situation as far as how, you know, how often they should mention him, how many times they should do updates. You know, if the guy's going to be going through chemo, like, you know, it's going to be a really rough time for him. So, you know, I think respecting his privacy is an important thing. I am totally with you 100% in that every time they like brought up leukemia and Roman Reigns having to leave in the context of the narrative, of the fictional narrative, it hit me in a bad place. It just, I can't explain what it was, but it just hit me in a place where like, oh, that is not good. I just don't care for that. As far as the question, the email was asking, did it seem like they were going through the motions? You know, part of it for me is that right now WWE is doing 3 hours on Raw. They don't have a huge roster. It does seem like the same chess pieces just being rearranged in different ways quite often. So for me, it's very hard to get engaged in a lot of these characters because it's basically the same six guys and it's 3 hours long. And I think that might lend itself to us thinking, wow, this isn't really as exciting as I thought or wasn't as cool as I thought. Maybe to newer viewers, it's more exciting. But for me, you know, I'm not as engaged as I think I should be after an Ambrose turn. I'm not sure it has much to do with Roman's situation.
Well put. Kevin in Albany, New York says, I've been noticing this for a while now. Whenever Undertaker gives a promo, he doesn't have the standard microphone with the WWE box logo around it. Do you think this is because it wouldn't fit his character or a personal preference? I first noticed it on Raw 25 and figured it was to keep an old school feel, but he's continued to do so since. Also, I'm just not feeling the segments with Taker and Kane and DX. The spooky talk doesn't work as much in today's WWE. And I also wonder if Shawn Michaels is going to wrestle in the do-rag. Yeah, it's nice to see Shawn without the cowboy hat and showing off the new shaved look. My hunch is he'll wrestle with that thing on because he thinks it looks better than not, just like Bobby Lashley. And more power to him if he wants to. I mean, I'm not judging that because it's just decoration and everybody does it in different ways in wrestling. The mic I didn't notice, so my initial reaction is, yeah, Undertaker feels like holding a WWE logo up to his mouth maybe is distracting or diminishes his character, but that's total guesswork. I hadn't noticed. Matt, you?
Yeah, he probably just slides that bad boy off. You know, he's just like, nah, I'm not going to put that on. you know, and to Sean, it's a cummerbund, Wade. It's a cummerbund on his head. I'm not sure. You know, I've never seen that style before. Strangely enough, it kind of works for him because he's Shawn Michaels. But there's no real long lingering shots at the front of him either. So it's a little strange. I do agree. I don't think it's because of the Saudi thing, but there's something falling way short for me for this tag team match and the buildup that doesn't have to do with Saudi Arabia. I think they're just if you were to, you know, your fantasy book for a second and say, okay, well, maybe the real Undertaker, the real guy behind there, you know, comes out a little bit. Maybe the real Glenn Jacobs comes out a little bit. You know, the real Triple H, you know, is out there, you know, four different ways. But those guys, I think, bear the brunt of why it's not as anticipated as it could be. I don't think there's they've given us any reason to be excited or to feel they're invested in it beyond being two dead guys who want to kill other guys, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I stand by my, I want to see Michaels in a different return match in a different country, in a different
set. Oh, absolutely.
Everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But Taker and Kane could sell it so much better. Like, and I'm not saying it's their fault. It's their instruction, but
right.
They're like, okay, fireworks or not fireworks, you know, the walk out there, do your poses, do your thing. People will love it. And the fact is, You know, it just appears they're not working that hard or very engaged, but I think it has more to do with the direction they're given.
Yeah, I agree. John H. in Tennessee, a VIP member, says, am I mistaken, or is that five turns for Nia Jax in 2018? This has to be a record. Not even Big Show turned that many times in 1 year. Why are we supposed to care about her character when all she does is a 180-degree turn every week? Yeah, it's not the same thing. I think they're really hurting Nia Jax. I don't know what's going on with Nia and Tamina. She was rude to Ember Moon and disrespectful. It's worse than Triple H being, you know, the daddy of NXT and then the heelish DX guy and then the ultra heel authority. And I mean, it's just like, you know, or put the crown on the Mae Young winner and everyone saying, oh, he's so great. It's just like he's all over the place, like constantly. But there's you have to kind of compartmentalize the universe that he comes from within the universe, or the country comes from within the universe. I don't know how to stretch that analogy out, but there's a context that explains why he's different in all these different places. With Nia Jax, there isn't. She's this wonderful, sweet lady who's been picked on and overcome, and you should cheer her for achieving, and she's winning awards. And then she's being a jerk to Ember Moon and being cocky and arrogant and complaining about her stealing her spotlight. And I mean, it's total mismanagement, and it's a shame. I don't know if this was a heel turn or just kind of a swerve out of her lane, out of the convenience of the storyline they're in. But I'm with John, our emailer, Matt. I don't think it's good.
I think by traditional standards, you know, she has done five turns. Not really any full turns, you know, that was backed up with, you know, a promo or a change in attitude for an extended period of time. But I think it's something I've talked about before. It's something I've learned from talking to writers and, you know, interviewing people behind the scenes. It appears to me it's a situation where there's not a lot of investment, you know, by the WWE into what her character is. And she's a newer, younger wrestler. She's not able to go up and say, hey, look, I need to know what my character is. Of course, it's ridiculous and it's counterproductive, because for us to care about whether people win or lose, you have to be invested in what that character believes, or you have to be invested in wanting that character to lose, you know, based on what their morals are. And we get none of that with her. I think it's just a reflection of that. They really focus on the top two or three feuds, and the other people are just details, and they're given instructions. This week you're going to do this. And she just goes, okay, that's my job. And, for us fans at home, it deprives us of the chance to be invested in her character either way.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Brian H. says, now that we know Survivor Series will be champ versus champ, how excited are you for Becky and Ronda? In my opinion, this will be the best worker Ronda has been in with, who can carry her to the next level. But WWE's making a mistake with this match. Ronda's going to get booed out of the building. I pray they don't turn Ronda heel with the Four Horsewomen interference. She needs to remain a strong babyface long term, just like Backlund, Bruno, and Hogan. All right. Is there a possibility Ronda's turned heel, Matt? And part two, I totally agree. Becky is the best opponent Ronda's had. And for that reason, setting aside all the storyline concerns, I'm looking forward to the match greatly in that realm, because I think Becky and Ronda can put together a hell of a main event worthy match. I think Becky's that good. And Ronda is, I think, game to make it happen.
Not the worst idea in the world, right? Like, you know, having the horsewomen interfere on Ronda's behalf, you know, whether willingly or non-willingly, and turning Ronda heel at this point where she's kind of getting to that crest of her popularity, you know, like they did with The Rock, which turned him into a giant face later on. What we always wanted for Cena, what we always wanted for Roman. Not the worst idea in the world. Even Charlotte coming back after a few weeks off to back up the other horsewomen in some kind of four-on-four dual-branded feud. Not the worst idea in the world. But let's just say that not happening, I would say that WWE is in a unique opportunity to have a women's match headline WrestleMania. Or excuse me, Survivor Series. They're in a unique opportunity. This could be the headline match if done well. Like, and it could be credible, and they could really push it, and it could be a really great thing for the company, even bigger than Evolution was as far as women in wrestling.
I agree, and I'd like to see it happen, and it's a match that seems worthy of it. I'm now a little concerned about what the men's champ versus champ match might turn out to be, and because I just don't know how AJ or Brian are going to hold up against Braun or Brock. I mean, I guess AJ O'Brien against Braun, I guess, could be interesting and intriguing, but I worry. I worry for SmackDown. All right.
Yeah, well, we saw AJ Brock last year, and they weren't doing much to protect AJ in that finish.
No. No, they weren't. Jeff from Colorado, good evening. Any chance those matching We Want Women's Tag Champ signs are being handed out by WWE? I can see the future when Stephanie waltzes out and says, the people have been demanding it. And they show this slickly produced video package about the evolution of women's wrestling with multiple shots, people holding up signs saying tag titles for women. Am I too cynical? And to everyone who is not already wise to the ways, go VIP. It'll save your life. At the very least, it'll change it for the best. And then go listen to The Fix with Todd Martin and the Bruce Mitchell audio shows. All the best, Jeff from Colorado. Go VIP, everybody. PWTorchVIPinfo.com. PWTorchVIPinfo.com will tell you everything you need to know about membership, and it's a good storefront, that webpage, to find out what we offer and what you're missing out on. I know we do a lot of free stuff here, and the cool part is all that free stuff has the ads and plugs taken away when you go VIP, and every once in a while, this one, like maybe this one slips in and I forget to edit, but, or don't make a note to the producer to edit, but mostly, vast majority of everything is streamlined. So that's cool. But there's a ton of other podcasts, throughout the week, plus 30 plus years of archives of podcasts and newsletters and interviews, ad free access to our website, including our mobile site. So it's a pretty cool deal. Check it out. And we'd love to have you support us by being a VIP member. Matt, to as far as the tag title thing, it would, God, can you imagine if they orchestrate fan signs and then say you fans demanded it? But the way that Stephanie's co-opted the Give Divas a Chance thing, I won't put anything past them when it comes to that kind of thing.
I think that's happening, man. Like, I got to be honest with you. Like, I've thought that for a little bit. And let's look at what else has happened, right? You know, Tamina and Nia, I mean, that is heading towards a tag team. Like, that is what that is. And then you've got a bunch of women being grouped together in different factions. You know, Iconics are a tag team already. You know, you've got the Riot Squad. You've got the two over on SmackDown, Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. And, you know, of course, they're handing those signs out, and Evolution was the perfect time to do it. But I think, you know, they have, obviously they have enough talent where it seems almost unfair not to have tag champs or a secondary title for the women right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they've got the depth and more to come in developmental, and the Mae Young tournament shows that. All right. Again, Jeff, appreciate your kind words about VIP membership, and I'm sure Todd and Bruce do too. All right, Matt says, after watching Evolution, I can't help but feel my worst fears were realized, that despite WWE's constant tooting of their progressive horn, this show was nothing more than a political swerve and means nothing to WWE in the grand scheme of things. As for Finn Balor coming to the ring on Raw, Evolution has not been mentioned. Very odd that a pay-per-view occurred less than 24 hours ago isn't mentioned at the start of Raw. Evolution began with technical problems, something that seems incredibly out of place in WWE. And when no one could seem to pronounce Marina Shafir's name, I wanted to start throwing things. Beth Phoenix even called her Schaefer at one point. All these things just make me feel like WWE did not put the effort into the show that they would into a pay-per-view with a man on it. Plus, Crown Jewel being advertised on it just stuck out to me as tasteless, to say the least. Despite these things I mentioned, I love seeing the women showcased, and I enjoyed the matches very much, but I'd love to hear your reactions to these things, and if you thought similarly to how I did, or perhaps I'm being too critical. I think the attention they gave Evolution on Raw tonight was fine, Matt. It didn't jump out as overly generous, but we got the three or four video montage slideshow packages. They talked about Ronda winning, and they had a 10 women tag match with Trish and Lita out there, and they talked about it more. I thought it was appropriate. I mean, I actually kind of was relieved they didn't spend too much time patting themselves on the back for making, you know, life worth living for little girls out there, that they now have a future they didn't have last year.
Yeah, I would agree that life-changing, revolutionary thing got played up a little bit. Once again, I do object that they didn't use the pay-per-view as a way to launch off a bunch of feuds in a way that you could see the secondary, you know, second-tier wrestlers, women wrestlers are as important as the second-tier male wrestlers. But at the same time, they did have Crown Jewel to promote. They gave enough lip service to it. The women, the wrestlers, need to be given credit for taking that opportunity and going with it for a, where people are saying it's the best pay-per-view of the year. They did no harm to the future prospects of there being an all-women pay-per-view. They actually kind of made it happen. So we'll see. The WWE is slow to change. But I think what happened to Evolution last night is a good indicator of maybe the next one will be taken a little bit more seriously.
All right. Well, very good. Matt, thank you so much. Great having you on again.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be on. And if you guys like what I say here or don't even like what I say here, you can check me out on Truth with Consequences with Vince Russo or Why It Ended with Robbie E.
Excellent. Matt, we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot, Wade. You have a good one.
You bet. You too. All right. So join me tomorrow for the post-SmackDown show. We'd welcome your phone calls if you're hearing us before SmackDown here. And we can talk about the follow-up to Evolution and also what they do with AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan. Do they write Daniel Bryan off the show? Now that John Cena was written off of Raw, there were rumors, I think, less strong, less backed, but that Daniel Bryan was pushing back against going to Saudi Arabia. We'll see how that played out. Daniel Bryan has less to lose from a PR standpoint compared to John Cena, who's trying to make inroads outside of WWE. Daniel Bryan, not really. So that'll be interesting to keep an eye on. Zach Haynor, who normally covers Raw along with me on PWTorch.com with his alternative perspective reports and also covers 205 Live and a host of other contributions to PW Torch with podcasts and columns. He'll be joining me as co-host of SmackDown. And then later on this week on our Blue Brand, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. These are the post shows. On the podcast later this week on the Blue Brand, Rich Fan joins me for the flagship edition of the program. Rich Fan from the Deep Dive, the Saturday edition of the PW Torch livecast. He also covered the NWA 70th anniversary pay-per-view event a week ago Sunday for PWTorch.com. If you missed his report on the Cody Nick Aldis rematch, you can check that out. Both Rich Fan and then the next day, Sean Radigan had their coverage and match analysis of that show. Please be checking out PWTorch.com. We've amped up our regular news coverage. We've got new columns, new features, our weekly overviews of the five major brands, NXT, ROH, New Japan, WWE, and Impact Wrestling, are at the top of our desktop page, pwtorch.com, and also our mobile site at pwtorch.com. So you can get an overview of news you might have missed, so noteworthy social media posts, live event results, quick recaps of what happened on TV shows with the major angles, and also commentary at the end by each of our writers contributing these features. So that's a big new weekly feature, a collection of five big, long weekly overviews on each of the big five brands each week. Plus the afternoon news update, a reason to tune in every day to see what is going on in the world of professional wrestling. Of course, we still do standalone stories on the bigger breaking news stories of the day. In fact, we have a detailed report up right now on John Oliver's Last Week Tonight 5-minute segment, critical of WWE for going back to Saudi Arabia, including taking them to task for being tone deaf for an Instagram post of an urn with DX spray painted on it with the caption, "Respect is out the window at WWE Crown Jewel." The irony lost on WWE. Also, the top three developments of Raw and SmackDown. Jeff Andrew Jr. Has you covered on that after Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night. So you can see what did he pick out as the big three developments on each of those shows. And he adds his comments on them also. So many reasons to check out pwtorch.com on a daily basis. Check it out right now. See what the breaking news is since this podcast was recorded. And you can also read my live coverage of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of each of the segments, including content on the show that we don't necessarily get into here on the podcast sometimes. So check that out. That's pwtorch.com. Also check out our sister site, mmatorch.com. Mike Hisco is back on board as managing editor with a ton of daily updates, columns, roundtable features on hot topics in MMA, and more. That's MMATorch.com. Keep up on what's going on with Conor McGregor, Brock Lesnar, Jon Jones, and so much more in the world of MMA, UFC, Bellator, and more. And as Matt mentioned earlier in the show, PWPodcast.com, written recaps of pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts such as Sam Roberts, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and more. That's pwpodcasts.com. Written reports and reviews of top pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts. Follow me on social media at The Wade Keller on Twitter. That's at The Wade Keller. Follow our brand on Twitter at PW Torch. Follow us on Instagram at PW Torch. And on Facebook, you can like our brand at facebook.com/PW Torch. And you can friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/Wade Keller Torch. Support us when you shop Amazon. PWTorch.com/Amazon. Just start there when you're going to shop at Amazon. Don't go right to Amazon.com. Go to PWTorch.com/Amazon. Click the Amazon logo and shop away. We thank those of you doing that already so much. It's such an easy way to support us and throw a few coins in the tip jar, a few bucks in the tip jar. They basically give us a commission for mentioning them on this show, but you have to go to PWTorch.com/Amazon and click on that link for them to know that we sent you there and mentioned them. So thank you for doing that. I know a lot of you will be shopping at Amazon over the holidays. And if you're going to do that, think of us and don't go right to Amazon.com. Make that pit stop at PWTorch.com/Amazon. If you didn't hear Sunday night's PW Torch livecast, Wrestling Night in America with Greg Parks, check it out. It is the post-evolution call-in show. We had an on-site correspondent, live callers. Greg ran down the show, gave his thoughts on each of the matches. That's available for free right now at pwtorchlivecast.com. That's a homepage for the show. 7 new shows per week, all on different topics on a daily basis. And you can also subscribe. Just search Pro Wrestling Torch or PW Torch, one or the other, or both will work, on your podcast app of choice. And you can subscribe to that. There's 7 new shows a week, 1 new show each day with a different theme: ROH, NXT, Impact, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling fans, and more. Go check it out. That's PW Torch or Pro Wrestling Torch as the search term wherever you listen to Pro Wrestling Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Podcasts, and more. Thank you, everybody, for your support. And until tomorrow for the Post-SmackDown Show, this is Wade Keller signing off. Thank you for downloading the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Don't forget, you can get these shows with the ads and plugs and commercials all edited out on our special VIP audio feed with a VIP membership. That applies to all 4 shows that I host during the week, the Wade Keller Post Shows and podcasts later in the week. And also all 7 PW Torch livecasts, plus all of our VIP exclusive shows throughout the month. There's about 100 of them. I host about 12 per week that are VIP exclusive. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, post pay-per-view roundtables, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, and the Fix with Todd Martin. We got a bunch of other great content. Check out full details at pwtorchvipinfo.com. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com. Yes, all the VIP podcasts, including the ad-free versions of this show, are compatible with popular podcast apps on both iPhone and Android. You can also stream the shows right from our ad-free VIP website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. So check out details if you want to support us and get these shows ad-free and a ton of other VIP-exclusive podcasts. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com for more details. We've got a mobile-friendly sign-up form. You can be VIP in about 2 minutes. Go for it. pwtorchvipinfo.com. If you shop at Amazon, I have a request. When you shop at Amazon, don't go to Amazon.com. That sounds weird. How are you going to shop at Amazon if you don't go there? Well, don't go directly there. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you go there, there's a giant Amazon logo. Click on it. It takes you right to the Amazon homepage where you were heading anyways, but that small detour tells Amazon, we sent you there. And when they get that message, they send us a commission on everything that you buy. So it's a great way to support us without having to do anything different other than when you shop at Amazon, start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for your support.